Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Steve, Todd, welcome to Growing Up B2B.
Thanks, Ed. Good to be here.
Good to see you, Ed.
Good to have you. So let's start with you, Steve. You grew up around your grandfather's business and later stepped into leadership during a challenging period. Looking back, talk about what that experience taught you about clarity and communication and partnerships.
Well, I came into a family business that my grandfather had started about 50 years before. My uncle was working there. And one of the biggest challenges we had was authority, clear roles and responsibilities, and who was working for who. When we're home with the family, it's, there's nobody's working for anybody. But when we're in the office, you need some clear lines of responsibility and some clear understanding of who's doing what. Mm-hmm. And my uncle and I clashed a lot back then. And that did not help us as we tried to navigate through the challenges. And we were in the textile industry, the challenges of that industry disappearing in this country. Mm. It disappeared fast in the 90s. And so we ended up doing more fighting with each other than we did actually trying to figure out how to save the business. And ultimately, it led to us having to close the business and me not talking to my uncle for, over 30 years now.
So as that was unfolding, or maybe in the aftermath of that, what were some of the carry forward lessons from that experience?
The biggest one was that it's really super important to be aligned with what you're doing in the business, number one. Secondly, it's very important, critical, to have clear roles and responsibilities. Who's in charge of what? Who's doing what? Who needs to make this decision or that decision? And Todd, I'm sure we'll get into this at some point, but, having a better understanding of how to operate the business as a team versus operating a business as like a solopreneur or something like that.
Mm-hmm. And turning the attention to you, Todd. You also experienced a partnership that eventually came to an end before stepping in with Steve and at Cramer Industries. What did that chapter of your life teach you about, what you were looking in a business partner?
That taught me that the existing relationship isn't enough. And once we stopped working or didn't focus on the partnership and only on the business, it was very easy for trust and respect to erode away. And that's exactly what happened. Mm. So it was really more about, I knew this guy for years. I worked with him for years. We were friends. We're almost, treated like family. He was about 14, 15 years my senior, but we were buds. And then once the business started and we were gaining momentum, and then you have the inevitable bumps in the road, we realized that we weren't focusing on us. And unfortunately, I didn't have the skill set I have now. It just eroded away and imploded.
Mm-hmm. So when you first started, I'm going to take you back to some of those early discussions.
The good old days.
You first started having that conversation about partnership at Cramer Industries. Talk a little bit about how those conversations unfolded and how intentional you were about saying, whatever we do, let's not do what we both just did. You know what I'm saying? Like how intentional were those discussions? And just if you guys could give a little color on how they unfolded.
Sure. As far as the partnership is concerned, we were both a little gun shy at the time. Mm-hmm. We knew we both needed to find a new opportunity, and we did with Cramer Industries. But we were unsure whether or not we wanted to get into a partnership again. Mm-hmm. And so one of the very first conversations we had was about what we want the business to do for us. So we talked about what our personal goals were, What did we want to accomplish in life? And then that led into, okay, how do we now structure the business to allow each of us to achieve those goals? And we did not have the same personal goals. Mm-hmm. And we learned very quickly, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But it was about how to structure the business. And it took some time to figure this out. It wasn't like we walked in and we're like, this is exactly how we're going to do it. And this is going to be perfect. It was, you know, an evolutionary process to mm-hmm. some extent. And okay. understanding what each of us wanted and getting a little bit vulnerable at the time mm-hmm. was really the foundation of how we built our partnership and how we started to build that trust and respect with each other. But it was understanding what we wanted the business to do for us, not what we were going to do for the business.
That's awesome.
Which I think is the more common way that people do it.
That's a great point. Todd, how would you follow that up? As you look back at that chapter, when you were in that discussion phase of, should we do this? Should we not do this? What will it look like? What are some things that stood out for you?
I had a fear. This came at the best time of my life and the worst time of my life. You know, I was just coming out of a traumatic experience. I was actually still kind of in it. Because I don't know if people have had businesses or partnerships that implode. It's not, you don't just close the door and walk away. It lasts for years. So I've been in it and I saw the pain that it caused my family, and I didn't want to do that to them again because mm-hmm. they invested everything into me, you know, emotionally and my partner, and much like a divorce, their collateral damage. Mm-hmm. And it was a business divorce. Very, very messy. And it allowed me to kind of take a step back. Like Stephen said, we talked about what we call our fundamental focuses. That's our goal in both professional and personal. And it allowed us to kind of build the partnership by design, not by default. Mm-hmm. That happens a lot. A lot of business partnerships are just built by default. Who's in the room at the time when the idea is created, not who can bring what skill set, who has what baggage, and none of that. So, it really made me say, all right, if I'm going to do this, I know what doesn't work. I know there's probably a million things that don't work, but I know what doesn't work. What I did not work. How do I flip that and make it work for me? And to Stephen's point, it was not like kumbaya, we walk in. I mean, there was plenty of blow-ups and arguments and headbutting and stuff like that.
You've met this guy, right?
Plenty of that. And I realized that it's productive to an extent, as long as you can kind of grow and change from there. But it was really about getting vulnerable with Stephen and letting him know what my fears were, what my goals were, you know, building it up from there.
So many things that both of you just said, what I loved is the one, to be vulnerable, two, to be honest and transparent. And I think three, to, you know, when I look at some, when there's conflict, say, whether it be in a family business dynamic or a partnership dynamic, it's often one or both parties basically saying, why can't you just be more like me? Why can't you think like
that
me,
always,
act like me,
that always works
do
well.
It the way I would do it? Whereas, you know, in this particular case, if nothing more, at the onset, you're saying, all right, you be you. What are you about? I'll be me. This is what I'm about. This is what you want. This is what I want. And here's some lessons learned that didn't work for both. So let's, the opposite of Nike, let's just don't do it again. And that was somewhat of a rough framework. So when you look back early on, and how did that process roll out? So when you started to kind of define roles and decision-making rights, how did all that start to come into place? Or did you put that framework in place before day one?
No, in fact, when we first started off, we did not do a good job at all with defining roles and responsibilities. When we first partnered up, I still had the family business. It was in the process of winding down. Mm-hmm. And we found this Kramer Industries business that was third generation owned. And we kind of bought that business and took it over, and we're going to turn it around. And so when we first partnered up, the idea was that I would focus on my family business, Todd would focus on Kramer, and together we would fix all the problems in the world and do great. And we realized pretty quickly that neither of us really enjoyed what we were doing. We weren't having the success that we wanted. And we were duplicating efforts. Mm-hmm. And so we were very kind of siloed in one business or the other and doing everything with each of those businesses. What we found was, you know, after some discussions and realizing that, you know, what the structure that we had wasn't allowing us to achieve our personal goals, was that we kind of flipped the switch to more of a horizontal game plan where, you know, I liked doing certain things in the business and didn't like doing other things. Todd was the opposite, liked doing the things I didn't like to do and didn't like the things that I liked to do. And so we both kind of did those things for each business. So mm-hmm. I focused more on the tech side, the sales and marketing side. Todd focused more on the operations, the finance, and those kinds of things. And so we ended up very quickly starting to see success from kind of flipping that switch from more of a vertical focus to a horizontal focus.
I think we actually about 3 to 5x'd in a matter of about 12 to 18 months of what we were doing, just because we were getting more focused. We were spending more time working on the stuff that we are good at, excel at, and more importantly, that we enjoy. Because when we came across this opportunity, we decided, all right, you know, in the, like I said in the past, it's about, you know, it was just about the business and it wasn't really about our lives. I didn't know any better at that point. It really is about your life. And I'm not talking like we're a lifestyle business. We are a growth oriented business. We continue to be, but we get some of the benefits of that lifestyle business. We had a lot of conversations in the beginning about what we wanted to do, how we wanted to extract value, so on and so forth. And because we had, you know, failures in the past. So how do we, you know, let's do something different. And so it really allowed us to focus on that.
And if, you know, another theme that I'm hearing loud and clear is the two of you would sound like, especially early on and maybe to now, not afraid to talk to each other, not afraid to have hard conversations with each other. If anything, it almost sounds like you'll lean into them
and embrace it. Yeah.
And be okay with it. You know?
Yeah. I tell people all the time, what's your secret? Those are communication. We communicate. And that's how you build the trust, the respect. It's when the times that you're vulnerable. And I also tell them, I was like, when you think you've said it all, you're not done. There's more in there to say. And quite honestly, people don't hear things the first time all the time. You know, it's marketing, it could be, you know, especially it could be 8 times before, you know, somebody even recognizes you. So I'm an avid believer in repeating myself over time. Mm-hmm. And I do it for myself and for the person I'm talking to. But yeah, we believe in over communication, even when it's uncomfortable, even when, I mean, Steve,
it's never annoying.
Like when we were first partners, I'd walk into his room and he'd just be like, you know, I'd say I'm such. I'm like, nope, this is happening now.
But, you know, going into it, though, you also had the benefit of, you know, getting to know each other for a period of time and starting to build that foundation of communication. You know, what I'm always baffled by is, you know, I knew it was a family business, 3 brothers. They drink a lot and fight like hell. And guess what? When they started the business, it just spilled right into the business and it was just an absolute circus, you know, brilliant in their own right in terms of their industry knowledge and capability. They were brilliant guys. They just fight like crazy, you know, and, you know, after a while I realized that that's not okay.
That they're not 7, 9, and 11 anymore, you know?
So, when we were talking, you know, off camera, I think Todd, you may have said it, or Steve, that growth and building a quality partnership, it's more of an evolution than a revolution. So as you march through time, can you think about or speak to maybe some adjustments you've made to ultimately for the benefit of the partnership?
Sure. It's not so much adjustments, but it's enhancements.
Okay.
So for example, in the beginning of our partnership, we would go out to lunch every day. A lot of that was because we had the time. It wasn't a big business then. We were still growing the business and we had time. And we realized pretty quickly that time every day, that 30 minutes or whatever it was critical to us building our partnership and building our relationship. And so we maintain that to this day that, you know, every time we're in the office together or in the same space together, we go grab lunch and it's typically just us and it's typically quick and it's the deli on Monday and the pizza place on Tuesday and whatever. But one of the things that we've done over time, and it took years for us to be able to do this and create enough systems in the business that we could both get out of the office at the same time and travel together to go visit vendors or customers or whatever, is every trip that we go on, we take some time to do something fun together. You know, that could be going to a ball game in Chicago, The last trip we took, we got an opportunity to see the sunrise on Venice Beach, yeah, or whatever, you know. So, which sounds really stupid, but it's an opportunity for the two of us just to kind of work on that partnership and work on that friendship and work on that relationship outside of the office. And that's crucial to us being able to have a good relationship and stay aligned inside the business.
And a lot of it's just to support his interests, my interests. You know, we're very similar, but we're not the same. So he likes certain things that I don't like, and vice versa. And I want to encourage him to continue to do what he's likes. Mm-hmm. And in return, he does the same for me. And it just kind of opens me up more to him and his life. And that's been very helpful for us to just do some of that traveling together. It's been a blast, honestly. I've seen, you know, stuff that I know my significant other could care less about, you know. So it's good to be able to share that with, you know, not only a business partner or a friend, a brother at this point. You know, it is a brothership. We started out as acquaintances, and over the course of 25 years, we're family now. This is Uncle Steve to my kids. There's no hiding. It just is what it is. And it's really just been about leaning in on what works and addressing issues when what we're doing isn't working, and proactively going against this. Just to give you a little caveat, this was supposed to be a 3-year opportunity for us. That's why we're like, you know, all right, we'll jump into a partnership. It's 3 years. We're going to grow it. We're going to, you know, sell it and move on and to our passion projects or whatever at the time. Here we are, you know. Yeah, I heard a saying today: if you want to make God laugh really loud, just tell him your plans. Like, so, you know, here we are. You know, we spent the better part of our lives together at this point, and a better time today than we did 5 years ago, 10 years ago. And there's been a lot that's happened since then. But mm-hmm. the relationship's stronger. We, you know, we talk about the stresses, and it allows us to really enjoy our lives a lot more. Just so simple, yeah, little things: going to lunch and shoveling a slice of pizza down your throat in 15 minutes carries more weight than people think, especially, yeah, if it's done intentionally.
That's awesome. And for whatever it's worth, I'm on record as saying, if there's one thing I'll never do is never go to work for the family business. And, you know, here I am 31 years later. Whoops. So partnerships in business, when things are going well, all things feel great, right? The partnership feels great. The business feels great. Everything feels like it's aligned. But then there's those moments of high stress, and sometimes they're externally driven. 9/11 being one, the downturn in 2008 being another, COVID being a more recent example. So when things get weird in your world or in our world, right? What do you do to kind of stay connected in partnership? What like in those times when the business is especially stressed or external forces are kind of crashing in, how do the two of you maintain that alignment instead of maybe pulling apart?
Again, communication and over-communication, mm-hmm. knowing that I don't have to sugarcoat the situation. Mm-hmm. I could be completely blunt, like, yeah, like, I don't know about payroll this week, you know, that type of stuff, because of, again, these external forces. So it's really the over-communication, I think, has been key to how we navigate that. And just over time, we've built up that trust and respect and vulnerability so we can tackle these issues when mm-hmm. they arise.
It's doing the work when you're not in crisis.
Yeah.
Right? It's building that trust and respect. And for us, it's really been about these roles and responsibilities, what we call decision domains. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've structured all the businesses that we've been involved with in a way that we each have responsibility for different areas of the business. Which is not to say that, you know, like I handle the marketing, for example. I'm not going to not listen to Todd when he has a suggestion or whatever about marketing. But at the end of the day, it's my job to make that final decision. Mm-hmm. And we have found working with a lot of partnerships through the partnership guys that when you come across a partnership where everybody has to make every decision, no decisions get made or bad decisions get made. Mm-hmm. And so when crisis hits, the way that we stay aligned is by taking control and allowing the partner to take control of their areas of responsibility so that, you know, if we need to switch up our marketing in a crisis situation, you know, like 2008 was a great example where we had to really change everything we were doing in the business. That started with how we were going to market what we were selling, but it also meant that we had to change operationally how we were doing things. And that was Todd's responsibility. So It gave us an opportunity, because we had done the work pre-2008, to be able to sit down and say, okay, we need to figure out a way to get through this. This is what we're going to do. This is how I'm going to market it. This is how I'm going to handle it operationally. And we were never not aligned with what we wanted to do.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's how we're able to get through these difficult situations, is because we've created decision domains prior to that crisis. We've, you know, had those to build that trust and respect. And we understand just intuitively, you know, how we want to go forward.
Awesome.
And to your point, there's been a, since we took this over in the late 90s, early 2000s, and we went into 9/11, which was, for our area, Ed, you know, it was paralyzing. Mm-hmm. And it was paralyzing for not days, weeks, months, years. It really was. It changed the whole ethos of this area. Shortly thereafter, we were hit, which a lot of people forgot about, with the anthrax scare. Oh, yeah. A lot of people forgot about that.
Yeah.
Now, you try selling white powder in the tri-state area, which is what we were selling during the anthrax scare. And that was on the heels of the most tragic thing I ever witnessed in my life, which was 9/11. So you're still numb from that, and now you're trying to figure out, how do we actually do what we say we're going to do? And I could speak for myself, certainly. Had Stephen not been in my world, and we started, you know, it was still early in the partnership, but we were very communicative. I can't say I would have stuck it out. I honestly don't think I would have. I don't think anybody would have thought any less of us if we shut the doors and moved on to the next thing, and that we were just a casualty. We learned through some conversations that, no, I think we can make some moves here to stabilize our lives and then figure out what's next, whether it was selling it, closing it, whatever, but we didn't want to do it in that moment. So that, you know, the 2001 area really set us up for 2008, which was the financial crash when, I mean, you know, you tell somebody that, you know, something costs $100 and you heard their jaw hit the table, to Hurricane Sandy, which really impacted our area again, one of the, you know, most expensive superstorms or hurricanes in history. And then, you know, you go into that same, a couple years later, another business Stephen and I bought after a handshake deal burnt to the ground. You know, so it's like these are big things. And then, you know, obviously going to COVID and everything that has hit the supply chain, and, you know, we're in distribution and manufacturing, everything that's hit us over the last 5 years, we're still in the COVID crunch, as far as I'm concerned. You know what I mean? We're still dealing with the ripples of COVID. But it allows us to say, okay, you know, when other people are retreating, we're pushing forward. And that's, I can only do that with the confidence of having a like-minded partner and friend by my side. Yeah,
that's awesome.
And the big secret that nobody knows is, if you work on your partnership and not just try to fix your business, when those things happen, those external factors that's, you know, could potentially destroy your business, it makes the partnership stronger, not weaker.
Yeah, I mean, if anything that I'm hearing is that, not that you welcome times of crisis, but you also don't shy away from them. And, you know, and the two of you also, I see in a lot of the guests on the show, is just right, wrong, or indifferent, just an incredible tenacity. It's like, okay, we're going to go through 3 years or 25 years or 30 years, or we're going through. And it's that foundation of communication. Say, okay, how do we get there? What are you going to do? What am I going to do? What are we going to commit to? And then doing it. So if we were to segue now to, you put the book out, you put together consultancy, the partnership guys. And if you think about some of the, you know, maybe some of the family-run companies that you interface with or even support, what are some of the patterns you might see when you see either siblings together or multi-generational partners in business working together? What are some of the things that you see when that kind of dynamic is in play?
I mean, the biggest challenges we see, and I think I mentioned it earlier, was about roles and responsibilities. You know, it's a little bit easier when you've got multi-generation, because usually that older generation is the one in charge And all that they want to do is put the kibosh on the great ideas that the younger generation has, right? But you still know that at the end of the day, they're in charge, right?
Yeah.
At some point, that starts to flip as the older generation starts to get ready to retire or leave the business. The younger generation comes in and they want to start making all these changes. And the older generation is saying, yeah, you might just want to slow down a bit on that. And, you know, it becomes a challenge operationally to figure out who's doing what, who's allowed to do what, and those kinds of things. So it's really important in what we found in family businesses is to communicate those roles and responsibilities. Because, like I said before, when you're home, it's not quite the same. Right? You can yell at each other, you can argue, you can do all that. But in the business environment, you can't do that. You got to stay aligned. You know, every minute you're spending arguing with each other is a minute you're not spending building your business and figuring out how to make it better.
Yeah, yeah. And there most certainly, for a number of the guests, and I can attest to that myself, you know, as I overlapped with my dad and I was, you know, preceding the buyout, we had no guardrails. People didn't know who could sign off on what, and it was fine until we collided.
Right. It's a much more emotionally charged environment in a family business than it is in other types of partnerships.
And it certainly, you know, I feel badly for some of the staff at the time, because unfortunately they had to bear witness to some of those collisions and that's not professional, and that's not really the way it should go. So, you know, aside from roles and responsibilities, and Todd, maybe I'll ask you this, what are some other, you know, in some of the companies you work with that are in partnership and maybe family governed or not, what are some blind spots maybe where you start talking with them and you ask a question and they're like, oh, I never thought of that. You know, what are some of those?
I'd say one of the biggest blind spots that we see is them thinking that the family history is enough to have a successful business. If anything, it can add a much, much more complexity to it to that point, meaning that you have all that history. You know, these people have seen you in your worst, all right, your most vulnerable or emotional state. And sometimes that can get drawn into the business 25 years later. You know, it's just, it's kind of there. So it's really setting up the expectations of what we need to do to work on this partnership. Because now this family is becoming a partnership. The partnership's going to own the business. All right. Mm-hmm. People, they kind of sometimes skip that middle step of the partner working on the partnership, right? The family thing, that's kind of baked in. If your family's anything like mine, they're nuts, you know? But, you know, I worked with family. I didn't have a business partner that was a family member per se, but I worked very, very closely with family. My father, he was a retired police officer, and he was looking for his next thing. And he ended up coming and working for me. We set up a very good relationship early, working relationship early. And I said, this is my thing. This is mine. Like, I am responsible for this. I love you here. I want you here. I trust you with, you know, all of my life. So having another pair of eyes here is really helps. But, you know, this is my thing. I had cousins that work for me. I've worked for cousins. And some of that, you know, some of that old stuff will creep in. And it's just being able to pump the brakes, stop, address it, and then move on and realize this isn't the place for that.
One of the ways to avoid that becoming a problem is compartmentalizing family and business. So it's really important, especially if you're a husband-wife team. It's really important to make sure that you take time outside of the business to do things that are completely not business related. Or else all you're going to end up doing is talking about business all the time or having nothing to talk about at all outside of the business. And the husband-wife team becomes a ex-husband, ex-wife team.
Yeah. When we counsel people, we tell them, I was like, you need to have no-go zones. And that might be at family dinner. That might be at, you know, Thanksgiving. Might be once we're in bed, you know, like it stops. Because we've seen a lot of people that are in these, especially, you know, husband-wife partnerships. To Stephen's point, you know, they're like, it's all we talk about. There's nothing else is talked about. The kids are out. All we talk about is this. And I don't even know if I... you know, I'm not even connected to this person anymore. They're a coworker at this point. Mm. So we really suggest that people put in no-go zones of when they're going to talk about work. It's hard not to, right? Because you're seeing the familiar faces from your work, but it's they're also, you know, your family, and you got to focus on that, because we all know what happens when you don't work on your relationship or your marriage. Just like a partnership, it collapses over time. Yeah. It just degrades and then collapses.
So that's a great point. A number of great points from both of you. So, you know, I'm thinking of some past guests and as well as my own experience. A lot of times you'll see, you know, especially if it's a generational transfer, the second generation is maybe wants to put in place some parameters, right? Some decision-making process, some go, no-go zones, right? As relative to how and when things are communicated. And that's all well and good until that senior generation decides to crash the boards and do whatever the heck they want.
Yes.
So how do you deal with
that? They can.
So I'll throw that one to you, Steve. How do you deal with that? When you see that going on in a family business dynamic, how would you counsel or get them through that that scenario?
It's difficult, right? Because now you're starting to get to really into the family side of it, not so much the business side of it. But it comes again down to communication. It comes to getting the older generation to understand that they brought them in because they respect their work, their intelligence, their experience, whatever it might be, and to make sure that they respect that and trust them to be able to do what they need them to do in the business. Same thing with the younger generation. It's about them coming into the business knowing that their father or whatever had created this business, has been running this business for however many years, and they need to respect the fact that they have a lot of experience in this business and they know the industry and they know the business. And so when something like that happens where the older generation decides to crash the boards, is that has to evolve into a very quickly into a conversation about, okay, wait a minute. I thought you trusted me to be able to do this. And the older generation saying, you know what? I brought you in here because I knew you could. And then having that difficult conversation instead of walking away from the situation saying, I can't believe he did it again. Right. Or the older generation saying, this kid doesn't know anything. Right. Which all may be true. But you got to deal with those situations when they're small, because if you do that once, twice, three times, 10 times, 20 times, before you know it, you've got this huge elephant in the room and it's just impossible to deal with. So it's about dealing with things when they're small.
I think that's a great point. And, you know, to the appreciation of that older generation, usually they're not coming at it from a bad place, you know, because there's that instinctive protective element of like, I don't want to see my son or daughter hurt. I don't want to see them fail. So I'm going to help them. But by virtue of helping them and continuing to help them, you know, I think two things happen. One, they kind of get used to being bailed out. And I've seen this happen, and maybe the two of you as well, is where, you know, that older generation is hanging there around 70s, 80s, sometimes 90 years old, and is still kind of sort of pulling levers in the business. And, you know, that next generation might be 50, 60 years old. And when that elder passes on, you know, at 50 or 60, you're just learning for the first time, do I have what it takes to be a leader and to run this business without my mom or dad? And that's, I think, an unfair position to put someone in. You know, ultimately, you know, there's that protective nature that we have, but I think a lot of times that can backfire when you are talking business. So I don't know if you guys ever, you know, can add color to that.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. We found in these type of scenarios, it's really kind of the older generation wanting to protect the legacy. Happy that there's somebody there to run and keep the legacy going, but they're not ready to let somebody else guide the ship.
Yeah.
And, you know, we see it now. I mean, there's somebody that immediately popped in my head. Guy's 83, 84 years old. He brought his kids in to run the business. Won't let him make any decisions without him. Won't dismisses him during conversations and meetings. And I couldn't imagine what it would, what that would be like and how that affects the relationship in other ways. Mm. You know, it's, you know, I see this person who is, you know, late 50s, early 60s, just turn into a little girl, literally, and you know, placating their father. And it's what we found, though, is talking about the legacy and how we want to keep this opportunity going and honor what you did and take it to the next level. That helps with that situation. Literally just talking about what you think that the elders' fears or concerns might be. Again, that's mm-hmm. that direct communication. Stephen and I have, you know, I think, you know, we've bought many businesses over the years. We like these old legacy businesses. We love the history in them. And it's odd, but a lot of the offspring of these founders or operators don't care. They don't want to get into dad's business, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, our ability to talk to these people and tell them, no, we're going to keep the legacy going for you. Like mm-hmm. we have a piece of our business goes back to 1865. I mean, two gentlemen walking over from the Civil War. That's awesome. You know, yeah. 1911. I mean, just think about everything that this particular company went through. And that's what gets me through a lot of the strife as I kind of look back at the history. I'm like, all right, Civil War was over, but we're talking World War I, World War II, Great Depression, you know, Korea, Vietnam, like all of this conflict. And I said, we're not going to let it crash. So when these other things happen, it's like, it's not dying on my watch. You know, this company's not dying on my watch. Not going to happen. So, you know, we kind of just, we look back at that legacy. This company survived all of that. You know, it can survive this issue that we're dealing with now.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the challenges that you find with family business, multi-generational family business, is that the older generation knows how to lead, knows how to run a business, knows how to handle their employees, but it's a different kind of leadership when you have to deal with family in the business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so when I was in my family business, my grandfather, my uncle worked in the business. Other members of the family owned part of the business, but were not involved operationally. My grandfather had done a great job building up this business, but did not do a great job in helping me and my uncle understand how to deal with each other. Mm-hmm. Right? Totally different kind of leadership.
Yeah.
And so that just devolved when my grandfather started to decline and I took over the business. My uncle, I am sure, resented that because he was an older generation, but he didn't have the skill set to do that. And my grandfather never did a good job in helping us kind of mediate that process.
Yeah.
And we ended up fighting all the time.
Yeah. I think, you know, and the big impetus for this show is passing the baton, especially generationally, is a much different proposition than creating the baton and being that startup or that first gen or the founder. You know, that has its own set of challenges and problems and opportunities. But typically those people that founded the business, they probably didn't sit down and say, well, let me break the playbook for how I'm going to transfer this knowledge and transfer leadership and make this a smooth segue into the next generation. It's really a lot left unspoken, unsaid, undefined. A lot of tribal knowledge is floating around and all other issues. So as many challenges, I would argue, from a generational transfer than a startup in many respects.
Absolutely.
So getting back to a point you said before, Steve, is being attentive to some of the early warning signs of possible tensions. At what point should a company that is in some form of partnership with their family or other say, you know, we would benefit from some outside advisory, some outside support. We might have to call in the partnership guys here. At what point, what are some of those early warning signs that say, hey, we need to talk to these guys?
Well, they should call the partnership guys immediately after this podcast is over.
Of course.
We've talked with businesses in all different partnerships, I should say, in all different stages.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some partnerships that think they're the best partnership ever. And when we start talking to them and we do an alignment exercise with them, for example, there are always, always areas that we find that they can work on to help improve.
Mm-hmm.
So we would say that if you find yourself walking out of your partner's office and just kind of shaking your head, like, I can't believe that just happened, or swearing under your breath, or thinking I really should talk to them about something, but you don't. that's a great
avoidance. Yeah.
That's a great red flag to pay attention to.
And
that happens to every partnership. I don't care how good it is. And it's just a sign that either you're afraid to communicate, you're not communicating well, you're not fully communicating like Todd was talking about before. But when you find yourself just kind of having those thoughts of criticism, of negativity, as opposed to being open to learning and being curious, that's a time when you need to kind of step back and say, wait a second, something's not right here. And whether you call us or not, something's not right there. You need to address it. And we can certainly help people with that for sure.
Yeah, we've helped people forming partnerships, wanting to start off on the right foot. And we there were some partners like, you're not ready. You know, you haven't talked about these things yet. And, you know, so putting that in front of them, you know, we know these potential pitfalls. We help people that, to Stephen's extent, that know they're in trouble, but also people that are in a great partnership, but they need to do some planning for the next stage, like succession. And then we also, you know, sometimes the partnership is just done. And we like to help them, what we call de-partner, in a humane and productive way. Like I said before, there's a whole industry to unwind a marriage. The only thing that's there for businesses currently, up until the partnership, guys, was lawyers. All right. And now lawyers have their own agenda. They just do. And I'm not going to, you know, sit here and bash lawyers, but, you know, how do we help somebody, you know, keep the relationship, even if it's a little strained, keep that relationship, keep it out of the courts, keep as much of the money that they can. I'm sure you have friends like I do that have spent hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars breaking up, you know, partnerships.
Yeah.
And again, because it's being led by the legal industry, not by business people.
The I didn't realize that you would often also step in to talk with folks that are contemplating partnership because, you know, I'm thinking of one that just did split up about a year ago. And, you know, in the look back, one of the parties said, well, the person showed signs of this, this, and this, but I thought it was okay. I.e., in the look back, all the warning signs that ultimately made the partnership break apart were there. I just didn't maybe fully acknowledge them, speak to them, address them, but they were there. And, you know, I'm wondering if you guys find that to be true as well. When you go in, especially to two parties that are saying, well, we're thinking about this. Do you sometimes see that? Like, hey, there's some indicators that say maybe this is not a good idea, or there's some things that really need to be talked about now.
A lot of times it can be very subtle. So we were working with two brothers who have a very successful business together, and they get along great. They don't fight, you know, it's all good. And so we had them just initially run through an alignment exercise that we have. They were mostly aligned, but there were some things that they could work on, right? You know, as far as when they wanted to exit the business, how fast they wanted to grow, things like that. It wasn't 100% aligned. And the one brother that initiated the conversation with us was like, I'd be happy to go through the process with you. And the other brother was like, nah, not really interested. And it's not a big red flag, but that's a red flag, right? That there's a potential problem there. And it may never develop into anything, but imagine how much more success they could have if they actually addressed whatever the issues were and were fully aligned on moving forward. And, you know, the amount of success that they could have if that were the case. You know, we ended up not doing much with them, and that's fine.
Yeah,
they're doing just fine by themselves, but they could be more fulfilled. They could have a more successful business
and a better plan moving forward. And that's ultimately what it is. It's a, you know, a brother and then an older brother, let's just say. He's an older guy. He's in a different stage and just doesn't want to upset the apple cart. But the younger brother realizes, like, this isn't going to last forever. Like, we're going to have to look at the next stage, whether it's selling, it's, you know, purchasing, whatever it might be.
Don't ignore
the red flags.
Yeah.
Don't ignore your gut. You know, when you get the hairs that stick on the back of your neck, or you get that pit in your stomach, that's your conscience telling you that there's something that needs to be addressed.
Awesome. So last question, if any of our listeners wanted to learn more about the work that you do as part of the Partnership Guys, or even pick up a copy of the Partnership Playbook, what's the best way for them to connect with y'all?
Well, they can certainly contact us through the website, thepartnershipguys.com. The book is available on Amazon, paperback, Audible, and Kindle. So we encourage you to go check that out
and buy all three versions of it. Just so, just so you have it.
We'll have speaking engagements listed up on the website. You can come listen to us speak somewhere, but certainly fill out the contact form and contact us. We're happy to have a conversation with anybody about your situation and whether or not they can benefit from working with us.
And you can find us on, obviously, on all the social platforms, LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook. We have our own podcast that we have been publishing, the Partners for Guys podcast. So you can find that on YouTube. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify. You can find us on Substack. We're everywhere. Just search for the Partnership Guys and you'll find us.
We'll find you. All right. Excellent. Excellent. So partnership is one of the most powerful and could also be one of the most fragile forces inside a business. It can accelerate growth or it could quietly or loudly erode it. So what Steve and Todd have demonstrated with us is that strong partnerships are not accidental. They're designed, maintained, and refined over time. And their own journey reminds us that lessons from the past do not have to become liabilities. When handled thoughtfully, they become assets that strengthen ultimately what comes next. So Steve, Todd, thank you for sharing your experiences and for giving our audience practical insight into what it really takes to build a partnership that lasts. Again, we've been speaking with Steve Schneider and Todd Leonardis of the Partnership Guys and of Kramer Industries. And I'm your host, Ed D'Elia. And this has been another episode of Growing Up B2B. Thanks so much for listening and we'll see you next time. Steve, Todd, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Ed. Appreciate you, buddy.
Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.delianet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at DeliaNet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.